All right, welcome back. You are listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. It is almost, it's about 17 minutes past 7, and on the phone we have got Alex Bainbridge. Alex is a Socialist Alliance member and activist from Meanjin, Brisbane. Alex writes for Green Left and was heavily involved in organising protests against the invasion of Iraq back in 2003. Welcome, Alex.
Good morning, Zane.
So, 20 years, far out. We're getting on in age a little bit. It doesn't feel like that long ago. Can you take us back, Alex, to the context of the build-up to the invasion of Iraq and sort of set the scene of what it was like back then?
There are lots of things you can say about the context. I mean, one of the things that, obviously it's all in the wake of these December 11 attacks on the World Trade Center in the United States and the Pentagon. And that had really sort of pulled the rug under there was a very strong anti-corporate globalization movement that was, closing down the WTO in, Seattle and, blockading the World Economic Forum in Melbourne. And it was a very strong international movement, and the rug was really pulled out from under that when the September 11 terrorist attack happened. But it was only straight away the response of the Bush administration was to launch an invasion of Afghanistan, which really worried a lot of people, and there was a strong anti-war movement against that, but it was small by comparison to the movement against the Iraq invasion. I think that was partly because it was just so, it happened so soon afterwards and people were shocked by it. But a couple of years later, in the lead up to the Iraq invasion in 2003, people were just outraged at the idea that here was the United States going to go and launch this invasion against a country which had nothing to do with the September 11 attacks. And also part of the context with Iraq was that Iraq had been massively unfairly treated by the United States. In the sort of, more than 10 years since the previous year's invasion of Iraq in 1991. During that time, there was a blockade which killed, according to the UN, over a million children. And Madeleine Albright, who was the Democratic Secretary of State, famously or infamously said that the price was worth it, the price of trying to contain, Saddam Hussein's Iraq. We in the anti-war movement never supported the Saddam Hussein dictatorship. But we definitely supported the right of the Iraqi people to work these things out for themselves. And we were 100% against the United States imposing their solutions, at the point of an invasion.
So, as Zane already said, Ari here, by the way, hey, Alex. as Zane already said, you were fairly involved in, some of the organizing of the protests in 2003. Who else was involved, or who was involved broadly in organizing those protests across Australia, and like what sort of different groups and forces?
Everybody that was vaguely progressive. When I say that, I'm including even the ALP and trade union secretaries and peace movement activists. Everybody on the left was involved in some way. Without exception. There were very broad organizing, coalitions. I was based in Hobart at the time, which was a small, city, obviously. But we still had a large and dynamic, anti-war coalition. That was echoed all around the country. And there were tiny little peace groups started up and, universities and schools and little neighbourhoods. There was sort of all over the world. Melbourne started off that weekend of action in February, before the invasion, on the Friday evening. I remember that very clearly. It was like, there was this huge rally of 250,000 people, I think, in Melbourne. And I'd been living in Melbourne 10 years earlier when we had the anti-Kennett demos. So that was, That anti-Iraq war invasion protest was bigger than the anti-Kennett demos. And those of us looking from the rest of the country were like just so impressed and so inspired by that size. And then on the Saturday, almost everywhere else in the country had their protests, and there were thousands and tens of thousands of people at those, and, you know, exciting and, you know, very a huge buzz about the level of the turnout, the level of opposition. When you sort of added it up afterwards, it added up to about another 250,000 around the country then. And then on the Sunday was the big protest in Sydney, which that was almost, you know, that was about 500,000. So you essentially add it all up and it adds up to 1 million people protesting in Australia. And you can't get that kind of level of protest without the kind of, you know, the coalitions and the involvement of, you know, basically the entire left. Every progressive section of society was in some way involved in supporting those protests, and it was tremendously inspiring. I mean, I think you got to. I mean, obviously we knew what we were up against in terms of US imperialism was 100% dead set determined that they were going to have this invasion, no matter what the political cost, no matter what lies they had to tell. We also felt like, well, we actually maybe got a chance of stopping this, which I guess did mean that there was a letdown afterwards for a lot of people, which is why the anti-war movement didn't continue, or at least not at the same strength. I mean, obviously the movement continued, but not at the same strength as the 1 million people protesting.
Yeah, it'd be great if you could unpack that a bit more. Now, of course, there was massive protests in other centres all around the world too, but probably unlike the Vietnam, the movement against the Vietnam War sort of 30 years earlier, there didn't end up being this sustained mass movement to get the US out of Iraq once the invasion happened. There were still protests, but not anywhere near on that scale. I'm wondering if you can comment a bit on the sort of debates that came up in the organising meetings. You've talked about how people were kind of demoralised and deflated once the invasion still happened, after some of the biggest protests in the last century, the biggest global protests. So, yeah, like, what was the aftermath of that huge protest and the sort of pretty quick dying away of that protest movement?
I think when you're comparing it with the Vietnam War, the thing you need to remember, I mean, obviously where there were precedents before then, but I mean, there was sort of the kind of beginning of, well, the escalation of combat advice or military advisors in Vietnam was like 1965. So really, in a way, I mean, even though it kind of had begun before then, in some ways you can think of the Vietnam War beginning in 1965. And like there was some opposition in Australia and other parts of the world. But it was quite muted. It was very small, tiny in opinion polls. And and then it took 6 or 7 years before the big, you know, moratorium demonstrations in the early 1971, 72, or maybe 70, 71. I forget the dates, but it was 6 or 7 years period. And in that time, the anti-war movement had built up slowly, patiently, slowly and patiently built up. To the point where, essentially there was nothing, there were no lies the media could throw at that anti-war movement that would stick, because people had all those years and years of experience of seeing the lies and seeing the lies and seeing the body bags. And then, of course, all the US atrocities were exposed gradually over time, and it just built up to an escalating movement that essentially got to a point where, you know, countries like the United States and Australia, Australia withdrew combat troops. The United States stopped making combat troops the focus of their military engagement and shifted towards, you know, aerial bombing, and actually reduced the troop numbers in the last few years of the war until they basically lost militarily as well. That's a different context. I mean, one of the things which is so impressive about the protests against the Iraq invasion in 2003 is that the entire movement, or the height of the movement at least, happened before the invasion even began. And in some ways that's a strength. Like, in some ways that represented a huge gain in consciousness of the population that this war is not in our interest. It's not in the interest of the Iraqi people. This is just an imperialist adventure for control of the Middle East. And we shouldn't be part of it. And the fact that that level of consciousness was achieved before the war even began, And, I mean, the truth in opinion polls in Australia, I mean, there were different opinion polls, and they were, some said more than 50 and some said under 50 were opposed to the then impending invasion. But either way, it was around about 50%, almost about half the population or half or more of the population that were opposed to the then impending invasion. But in some ways, the fact that this all began before the invasion began was a bit of a weakness for the movement, in the sense that it wasn't that same experience that had been built up of the activists and the population that had occurred in the Vietnam War.
Mm.
So that when the invasion began, John Howard came in with this line, support your troops. Doesn't matter if you opposed the war before, but now that the war has began, we've got Australian troops who are in combat, you need to support those troops. That line had a certain appeal to some people. Or at least, if not an appeal, people didn't know how to answer it, and so that was one thing. And then I think a lot of people had literally, you can't have the biggest protest in world history without huge numbers coming along for their first ever protest, the first time they've ever taken any political action on anything, and. You know, that's not the same thing as, that's not the same level of experience that had been built up in the anti-Vietnam War movement. And so, it was devastating for a lot of people that the Howard government just went ahead with Australian involvement in that invasion despite this huge protest. And, you know, in a certain sense you can understand it. I think that Howard made a calculation and, you know, it turned out to be a correct calculation that the fact that the government went ahead with the invasion despite the opposition, that would demoralise people. And for years after that, you'd hear people say, you'd be trying to advertise a protest about anything, doesn't matter what the issue was, or what's the point of protesting, the government will just ignore you anyway.
Mm.
But I think, that's one side of it. I mean, I think the other thing to remember, it's important to remember the anti-war movement didn't stop. The anti-war, there were still very sizable protests even after the invasion. It was just not at that level of the biggest protest in world history.
Mm.
But there was a lot of opposition that still continued, and that opposition had a number of impacts. I mean, even one of the things, I mean, it's a bit gruesome in a way, but the US was planning what they called a shock and awe beginning of the invasion. And the military leaders were complaining, oh, we couldn't be as shocking and as awesome. That is, we couldn't kill as many people as they wanted to in the invasion because they were sensitive to the public opinion that was opposing the invasion at all. And there were other things as well. I think that the fact that there was such a strong anti-war movement gave confidence to the Iraqi resistance. And, you know, it's been a messy sort of, 15 or 20 years of what's happened in Iraq, but there's actually, even though it's not really reported that way in the media, it's kind of a bit the case that the US lost that war in Iraq. I mean, like they've, you know, obviously they've caused huge devastation in the country, but they didn't also achieve the goals that they wanted to. I mean, you remember George Bush, appeared on a Navy vessel with under the banner Mission Accomplished. That was only a few months after the invasion. And I'm trying to get the sense to people, oh, yes, the war's over now, we've won, we've achieved the mission. And that was false. So basically, the thing is, it didn't go so smoothly for the invaders as they had wanted. And, I mean, we're in a difficult situation now. I mean, like, you can see that had we been successful in stopping an Iraq invasion, it would be much harder for the governments of the world to be, or the governments of the Western imperialist world to be planning an invasion or at least a military engagement against China, which seems to be at least what some people have in mind. And that would be equally devastating for the whole world, really, if such a military engagement were to take place.
Yeah.
But,
Didn't mean to interrupt, but yeah, I mean, on one hand, it would be insane to try and have a military engagement against China, but on the other hand, sort of following from what you were saying about the difference between the anti-war movement with Vietnam and the kind of more short-term spontaneous actions in 2003, like, what do you see as, I mean, the lessons, but also the possible direction that we could go now with protesting the kind of continuously ramping or trying to oppose the continuously ramping up kind of war drive against China, particularly in the context of stuff like AUKUS and what's the and the Quad and that sort of thing.
The lesson of history from both the movement against the Iraq invasion, but also everything, all progressive change, it can only happen with grassroots, large-scale mobilization against the governments that are not acting in our interests. I personally have got a lot of confidence that protesting can make the difference now against an impending invasion of China, and also more broadly on climate change, on social justice, workers' rights, defending the NDIS, a whole, you know, all the things that are important in Australian society today. People power is stronger than the government. We just need to organise it, and in the right circumstances, it can happen. And, you know, these things are always, these things never go in a straight line. There's always an ebb and a flow. But the fact that Iraq, the opposition to the Iraq invasion was so strong, and it truly was, it's very hard to get a sense of it if you weren't part of it, because it was everywhere. There were, people were expressing their opposition in so many ways. Obviously the protests were the most visible way for it, but it happened in, you know, songs on the radio, on the, people's, expressions and things that they would just, you know, say to people on the street. I mean, it was a very strong opposition. I think the biggest thing you need to think about, you know, in terms of the demoralisation question is how demoralising would it have been if there'd been no opposition? And the fact of the matter is the people resisted, and the governments ignored the people, not ignored, but defied the people. And this is the other thing I was going to say, is that on all of the important questions, the anti-war movement was right. We said the government was telling lies. It's been proven they were telling lies. Mm. We said it was going to cause devastation to Iraq. It did cause devastation to Iraq. All of the claims that we made, the big important claims have been vindicated by the way things have turned out. And I think all those things together mean that it is more than possible for people power movements to go as far as that 2003 movement went, and then also beyond it, and to be an actual restraining force on future invasions and justice projects more broadly.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, a very inspiring position to have. I mean, I agree with you, but still very well put.
Yes. Any final comments, and particularly in the context of, yeah, trying to build a movement against these disgusting burning of giant mountains of cash on these nuclear submarines?
Yeah, well, I think that's the front line today. I mean, so in some ways we can look back on history, and I think it's important we look back and we draw the inspiring lessons that we can from that movement. But, you know, in some ways we don't want to just look back on our laurels or look back on and analyse the past. Right now the cutting edge is building a movement against these AUKUS. AUKUS in general, and these submarines in particular. And, there's a whole lot of other things that, you know, there's fighter jets, there's, in general, Australia is seeking to position itself as a leading world supplier of military arms to other countries, military exports. All these things are part of a militarist project which we need to very strongly sort of opposed. I think actually this is, I think, probably the important thing to realise, that there's nothing inevitable. There was nothing inevitable about that movement against the Iraq invasion in 2003. There were a number of things that came together, which I guess gave it a certain, which meant that it was able to be so strong. But also, it wouldn't have happened had it not been for grassroots activists doing the patient organising work, you know, the very simple things, creating posters, putting them up, you know, sending out emails, phone trees, meeting in coalitions and having discussions and debates. And there were debates, of course. It wasn't all you can't get the entire progressive side of Australia together on one question without expecting that it's going to be discussion and debates about various things. all those things, the patient organising that led into that that movement is going to be necessary to also create the opposition that is needed if we are going to stop these AUKUS submarines, because and that is the front line of the movement for certainly the movement against militarism in Australia today. But I think there is a very real sense that we've kind of got two paths we can go down in society in general. One is we can actually take measures to stop the climate catastrophe on the one hand. The other option is we can go down this path of building higher fences and, you know, stronger militaries and trying to think that we can, you know, quote unquote, protect our way of life that way. The first way is actually a path that is going to build security and, you know, if we do it properly, be security and justice for everybody on the planet. The other path, you know, despite the temptation to some people to think otherwise, is going to be insecurity and injustice for everybody on the planet. So I think that climate action is real. We really have the case today of, you know, climate action versus more wars, and we should be on the side of climate action.
Mm. There was a joke I saw somewhere on the internet on the way here, actually, which was basically about climate deniers, and the joke is, what if this is all fake and we're trying to make a better world for no reason? So that's the work that needs to be done on all of those fronts, like you were saying. Very well put. And yeah, thank you very much for joining us, Alex.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thanks heaps.
Yeah,
all right, talk to you again soon.
See
Alex,
you next time.
Take care.